Okay, good morning. Last week, if you recall, we were focusing on mass observation and the mass observation project, and culture and so on. And this week, in the second of the two sessions I've been delighted to share with you, we're focusing on a particularly significant publication. Certainly one which, when we're considering the notion of photography, design in context, is really at the heart of the whole sort of subject area. Again, it kind of echoes a lot of the other sort of key things we were talking about last week in terms of being of its time, reflective of its time, and also developing its own particular aspect. And as you can see from the title there, it is the Picture Post. I want to start off with a few general themes about it, a bit of background primarily in terms of the duration of the magazine. I think you'd say probably the 20-year run-in from 1938 to 1957, 19 years or so, was a reasonable duration. But it's also a key element in terms of why it kind of existed in that particular time. I mean, it could almost arguably be seen as the Snapchat of its generation, really. It's Instagram, because of the sort of comments and things that went through there. Significant number of copies were sold on average each week, 1.7 million as you can see there. And it's also seen primarily as being the United Kingdom equivalent of a magazine called Life, which was also a similar photographically centred magazine that was based in the United States of America. And again, had a slightly longer duration, but again it sort of echoed those points. There are a number of reasons in terms of why it folded, and I'll talk about that as the session proceeds, as well as some of the interesting elements that come across to pave the way for looking at the actual archive of Picture Post material that's held on the campus here and can be accessed and so on. So a couple of names that we will be talking about from these particular elements, one being Stefan Laurent, who was a Hungarian originally, and fled the Nazi occupied Germany in the sort of 1930s to set up a number of sort of key aspects within that. And Tom Hopkinson, who was one of the first key editors. Now, Hopkinson actually used the phrase, and he liked to think of his photographers as being thoroughbred racehorses, absolutely the top of the range. In Hopkinson's own words, writers were fine, but you could write the story when you actually got back from your trip to whichever country or event or place you'd actually been to. You couldn't capture the photographs. And if you didn't have the photographs to really deliver those pictures, what was there really to write about? I know there's an arguable sort of case from that point of view, but he very much was a champion of the photographer as someone to actually provide the images which really lifted the story out of the sort of average into, this is really gripping, this grabs the reader's attention from the point of view of the picture, the image. I suppose you could arguably say he's working on that premise of a picture being worth a thousand words. Some names that are worth noting down, because when we split up into seminar groups, I'd like you to hopefully look online and do some searches for these characters, some of whom you may have actually heard of before. There's the first one that's actually up of perspective, some gentleman called Bert Hardy. Other sort of key players in terms of the story of the Picture Post. And there are a whole range of sort of fairly famous photographers who all had experience working with the actual publication and developing their own ways. I've just selected a general selection of them here, which are worth sort of looking for and developing. Again, you're still looking kind of primarily a sort of male bias that system, but Grace Robertson is a good character to select from that perspective as well. And so is, of course, John Chilling. So bear in mind some of these sorts of people, names, bylines, people who are really in terms of shot composition, in terms of shape, images, the kind of impact that they were generating. And make no mistake, the Picture Post was very much designed to impact folk at a visceral level by the images that were being created, that were being seen. We talked last week about mass observation being a celebration of the ordinary in terms of the documentarians and so on.
In this particular case, it's not so much a celebration as capturing the moment, capturing the image, and working through that. From the writer's perspective, we'll scoot through some of these, not the Titanic and Avatar creator James Cameron, something completely different from that point of view. Robert Key actually went on to have a fairly key political career, no pun intended, as indeed with Fife Robertson, who worked extensively for the BBC in terms of his own views and takes on that whole side of things. And then Scott James also was connected together with the whole sort of system. But as ever, they worked to produce a fairly worthwhile setup, and as a gentleman you may recall from last week, obviously crossed over J.B. Priestley and also provided a lot of the additional textual material that we went through in terms of the picture post, etc. So we're going to consider, say, how it developed, how it sustained itself, why it kind of effectively imploded, and also how politically there were key issues between the owner, Edward Holton, and the people who actually worked with him, and also the take that people that worked with it that were sort of submitting material to the magazine. There was a tension between right and left ideologies. Holton was more kind of institutional chap who really didn't want to actually rock the boat too much. He was concerned when we actually started getting it, or when some of his reporters wanted to really take a much more socialist perspective on life. You know, you didn't want to actually sort of fight in terms of an anti-fascist movement. I mean, obviously, inevitably, with the Second World War, the picture post was at the heart of that particular element, not only from the point of view of reporting, but also from the perspective of propaganda. And what we actually find now in the second decade of the 21st century is that this is a heck of a useful documentary resource to look back on, to actually see this 20-year snapshot in the middle of the 20th century where photography is pretty much at its height in terms of its heyday and images and striking notions from that point of view, and also, again, providing us with an overview of the kind of experiences that are taking place within that, and, of course, of the many wars and conflicts that were being reported on and developed. When it effectively folded, the picture archive, of which there were thousands and thousands of images, was sold to the BBC in 1957. Great, the BBC's maintained it. What happened then? Well, it wasn't the end of its whole system, because the BBC itself actually sold the entire picture post collection to the Brian Deutsch Company in 1988. And then it was sold to Getty Images from John Paul Getty in 1996 for, as you can see, the princely sum of £8.6 million. Again, a kind of indication, if you can kind of quantify the essentially qualitative of how important the images that we actually see in the picture post library actually focus on. Okay, so taking that as a sort of brief introduction, let's go on to sort of put a little bit more meat, so to speak, apologies to any vegetarians, on the sort of key things that we've actually got here. Right. So, 1938 to 1957. Some of the precursors that some of the people who were involved with Picture Post worked on were things like the Tuppence Weekly Illustrated spy magazine, so a lot of graphic drama. 1930s was the era of pulp fiction, where cheap, popular magazines were being produced on a fairly regular basis with lots of lurid imagery, with lots of sort of adventure series, serials, and so on. And people were kind of used to the popularity of the Saturday morning matinees, the heroes, the heroines. Hollywood, as I've already mentioned, is very much in its sort of second, third decade now. It's producing a whole variety of other aspects. And you're getting a whole aspect of magazines and productions for people to actually use in their leisure time, make use of. They put me a classic example. The most fearless magazine on the bookstalls pokes fun at everyone, prime ministers or bishops, duchesses or bathing beauties, makes victims of the wall, etc., etc. So into that, we have this notion of let's establish the picture post. Let's actually sort of put this into a scenario. Because as is always the case, if you're setting up a magazine, you're looking to have some sort of business sense. You're looking to make some sort of profit. You're looking at how this is going to sort of work through on that basis. Could we actually consider the Picture Post to be a modern magazine? Yes, actually, we could. And again, in terms of some of the key things we'll sort of work through this whole aspect, it's worth considering that phrase in particular. That actually, for folk who were your age, or your grandparents in the 1930s and 40s, that was one of the sort of key elements of success as far as the picture post is concerned. It handled subjects that ordinary people would talk about and argue about themselves. Now, that might include celebrities. It might include matinee idols, movie stars. It might include sports stars in certain instances. It probably would include royalty. It would probably include the notion of celebrity. It would probably also include elements relating to politics as well. If you kind of do a snapshot sort of contemporary, your Theresa May, your Carl Junkers, your Wayne Rooney's, your Zlatan Ibrahimovic's, and so on and so forth, all kind of covered and sort of addressed with respect to images and lines that come through. So from that perspective, it's providing, again, folk with a tangible, physical sort of recording and representation of things that they're used to and so on. And that trio that I've actually listed up for, well worth sort of maintaining in terms of how they kind of came together to really form the heart and the bedrock of the picture post. Holton, as I mentioned, being primarily a conservative owner and publisher. So he's putting up the money to effectively fund the picture post. Lawrence, being a Jewish-Hungarian magazine who'd already had experience before he migrated to Britain in the 1930s of editing German picture magazines. And again, you may have already sort of covered this in other aspects of the programme, but the sort of images that you actually get with respect to German photography is, again, quite interesting and dramatic, both cinematically and indeed in terms of the still image. And Hopkinson, as I say, very much focusing as a standard journalist. But again, he's seeing photographers as thoroughbreds and worth sort of putting together and developing on that sort of zone. So a little bit of a timeline from that point of view. Lawrence came up with the idea initially in 1934 of launching a publication called The Weekly Illustrated. It didn't succeed. Okay. 3 years later, he came up with the possibility of actually selling a magazine called Lilliput. And then he sold that in a year later to Holton Press. That's how you get that combination between Holton, Lawrence, and Hopkinson working together to actually produce this picture post. It seems as though it's meant to happen. Possibly it was. But it's always worth looking at sort of the background of why these apparently disparate people, one with a sort of socialism background, one with a kind of more conservative background, wanted to come together to effectively produce something which was going to work for them, etc. But, excuse me, even on the opening issue, there was tension and conflict. What do you have on your front cover? It's the most important thing you can actually have on a magazine. It's going on the newsstand. What's going to grab the attention of a potential reader or purchaser to actually go and say, I want that one on that plan, etc. What are you going to focus on? Well, Holton was looking very much for a kind of conservative, easygoing system within the whole sort of system. But remember what's happening in Europe at this time. You know, we've had the Depression, the Great Depression. We looked at the Jarrow Hunger March last week, etc. You're getting the rise of the National Socialist parties. Fascism is rising. Germany, Italy, Spain, Hitler, Franco, Mussolini, all the sort of areas from that point of view. And you have that tension between an editorial line, which was really wanting to criticise the growth of fascism, and be totally against any kind of appeasement policies and saying, oh, it's all right, Mr. Hitler, as long as you actually don't bother us, we'll carry on with this particular area. And the sort of general concern that was being felt over German belligerence, this kind of bellicosity, this kind of desire for war, this kind of sabre-rattling and so on. Now, again, remember, Germany had this whole sort of system in sort of the 20-year period since the Great War, World War I, of effectively having to rebuild itself completely and developing a whole range of other factors. And now the sort of argument was Laban's realm, we wanted more room to actually expand it, and so on. So there was a big growth of concern in terms of what was happening there. And this is actually also reflected in the newspapers of the time. I mean, two of the most fervent pro-Hitler-supporting British newspapers were the Daily Mail and the Daily Mirror. Probably, again, they sort of prefer to sort of gloss over that in terms of their own sort of slightly revisionist history, but those are the sort of facts you can look at archive material where an awful lot of support was coming through from that basis. So you're into that whole notion of what are people's perspectives on and so on. But let's go back to that cover image. Hulton was keen to actually have a good, solid battleship on the cover of the first edition. Hopkinson effectively said, no, he wanted to have a girl on the cover, okay? Because obviously, attractive female, cover image, great, sells. For all sorts of reasons or scenarios. Lawrence, in the end, said, what the hey, let's go for two girls! And that was the first edition that we actually saw of the picture post. You know, it's bright, it's sparkly, it's kind of dynamic, it's youthful, it's energetic. It's not a battleship, but again, there's a tension in terms of what kind of reader are you going to appeal to? What is the kind of key sort of notion? Are you looking at the sort of the slightly more male-oriented girly magazine market, or the sort of lines for glamour and issues from that point of view? And it's interesting in terms of the sort of the image there. I mean, you might sort of think, oh, that's quite interesting. It's connotations of Annie Get Your Gun and Annie Oakley and sort of the Wild West heroine and so on and so forth. I mean, they all sorts of things. Or, again, I won't go into a sort of semiological sort of deconstruction of what we see in the image, but that was effectively what was settled on for the opening sort of October the 1st, 1938 issue of the Picture Post. Okay, as we said, 1938. Fairly critical sort of timeless, let's go to that, yes. October 1st, 1938, 1 year later, we'd be in the middle of engaged in the Second World War. So these were difficult times to actually launch any particular new magazine, and the whole notion of to work of what could be addressed was questionable. As we said, the launch proved to be a great success. But there were a number of key things that were happening in 1938 to 1939, September 1939, which were going to be pretty essential to this whole system. First of all, the Prime Minister, Alec Chamberlain, visited Hitler and effectively sort of said that all would be well with the world. He came back in an aircraft, and you could see the photo, the images and the documentation on YouTube saying, I have in my hand a piece of paper from Herr Hitler guaranteeing peace in our time. Peace in our time. And clearly this whole notion was, well, what do we actually move on to consider from the point of view of the second issue? Do we actually provoke this whole thing? Do we actually start saying this is ridiculous? Where do we take our particular readership? Because when you've got a magazine which is very successful, inevitably you can start building relationships with that readership, that audience. There's an element of trustworthiness. It's like these days, if you're a subscriber to Empire magazine or SFX or any of the, I don't know, 442 or if you're online, you know, there's kind of some sort of notion that somehow not only do you like the topics that are actually in the magazine, but you might possibly be influenced or nudged into certain sort of ways and thinkings from that point of view. And Hopkinson was quite clear. He maintained that for the Picture Post to survive, you had to be provocative. You didn't want to lecture, you didn't want to actually set down morals or moral guidelines, you didn't want to sort of effectively sort of necessarily preach to people, but you needed to actually state that what you were about was for a common sense magazine which worked through that process and so on. Issue 2, therefore, led with a front cover of Neville Chamberlain. There he is there, Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain. And the line underneath there, I have done all one man can do to save peace. Sadly, he wasn't successful. But again, in terms of that, it was a completely different contrast, that cover, with the two dark jumping girls on the first one. And you sort of say, well, hang on, is this a kind of serious political-based newspaper? Is it a kind of more lifestyle-based newspaper? Actually, it's kind of panning out to be both, as we'll see in terms of images and so on. Okay, some of the sort of key things in terms of other areas that developed and fed into the Picture Post. Well, neither Britain nor America actually followed what you often saw as being hailed as the visual dynamism of German magazines. AIZ, as we'll see in a few moments, used techniques, as you can see there, such as photomontage, repetition, hard lettering, casting. You know, they basically played around a lot more. I mean, both the covers that you've actually just seen were fairly standard deliveries. And again, you know, it's how do you actually work with the image? How do you manipulate it? How do you actually provide notions that were actually addressed and sort of make it come alive, almost lifting the image off the page? What sort of techniques can you actually use in terms of that whole system? And I'll show you a couple of the AIZ scenarios, in a few moments. But they were radical in their delivery. It's worth noting that this particular period in time also sees the growth of the Surrealist movement. The players such as Salvador Dali and Buñuel, a lot of kind of artists are kind of creating a whole range of new aspects. Eisenstein, even in the USSR, is actually developing a whole range of things. So there's lots of great creative upsurges in talent working through that whole process. But as we've already seen, what you did also get was a large exodus of people leaving Germany and surrounding countries with fascism growing, feeling that there wasn't a place for them at that time, and migrating to Europe, or not to Europe, but migrating to Britain, to America, and so on. Because if you take a fascist movement which actually turns around and says that, yep, you're a photographer, oh yes, fine, this is not art, this is a Goering, you know, the butcher of the Third Reich, the Henker des Dritten Reichs, you know, how can you dare to put that sort of photo montage together? Clearly, if you're putting that together, you must be some sort of subversive degenerate. Get out of our country, heraus! You know, so there's a lot of tension there in terms of free expression, photographic images, where do people go? Undoubtedly, we look at this now and we think, yeah, there's a lot of talent that's actually in there in terms of photo montage, collage and structures that have been put together. But as we know even today, if you actually are not careful, you can alienate and create all sorts of problems and difficulties if you're not sensitive to your audiences and so on. But again, arguably there are key reasons for developing the sort of notion, I mean, as they saw another sort of the clasped fist and the collection of faces that sort of show the whole sort of development of fascism, and the very, on the one hand, disturbing images that you see of Ein Volk, Ein Land, Ein Führer. One Volk, one land, one country, one leader. Again, what is happening in terms of that whole notion of people sort of slavishly following through this whole sort of process? I mean, a lot of the rhetoric that you're hearing commentators talk about in terms of the United States presidential election tends to sometimes echo this. So it's an indication of just how resonant these kind of images are maintained, you know, 60, 70, 80 years later. There's still a sort of impact in terms of what they generate. And the sort of slightly disturbing concerns that we actually have, you know, when you see the sort of messages being put across from that sort of side of things. And indeed for good reason. And there's a Picture Post. Now you might sort of think, okay, what's he saying there? It's referring to Neville Chamberlain's piece in Our Time. It's also referring to the fact that you might as well see elephants fly, which is just prior to Dumbo, obviously, as to see that being a success. You know, that's the key elephants. The elephants are happy, they're flying about in the sky. The elephants are happy because they've got peace. For how long have the elephants got peace? Ah, oh, that, alas, no one can say. So it's quite clearly using the technique of satire to really express the sort of editorial view that Laurent actually had, without necessarily upsetting the owner, Mr. Holton, or indeed jeopardising sales of the magazine. So you can read the message in on different ways. Again, it's up into discussion and debate as to which is more effective. You're still seeing that element coming through in that, so say from the third edition. So that's the third week of the picture post, October 15th, 1938, after Neville Chamberlain has returned from the meeting with Herr Hitler, and there's a great scepticism. Okay, we're talking about peace in our time. Is that really going to be the case? Well, maybe, maybe not. I mean, it's a yes when an elephant flies, etc. And so on and so forth. So what you're gradually seeing developed as well within the picture post is the growth of photo montages and developments. That here an image, obviously, of Hitler wearing a sort of old Kaiser hat, and the notion there between peace and war, Kaiser Adolf, the man against Europe. You know, what is being perceived as the sort of the strategy, how is he going on? And this is long before anybody actually were well aware of the atrocities that were subsequently to manifest in terms of Holocaust, etc., etc. But again, Hartfield putting that particular aspect together. In other words, you're getting a shift in terms of the politicisation of the picture post, and it's beginning to make sort of fairly standard, major sort of commentary in terms of what we're seeing and so on. And Laurent was quite clear, you know, he'd already had to escape the growth of Nazism in Hungary and so on. And as he said, the Hitler's coming, he caught up with me once, I'm not waiting to be caught again. Laurent effectively sort of left the country and headed off to New York. And indeed, a couple of photographers, Felix Mann and Kurt Hübschmann, were then actually interned at the Isle of Man as enemy aliens because they were actually German. Okay, despite the fact that they actually left Germany, they were working for the picture post. Yeah, that's, I'm sorry, you sound German, you must be German, you must be the enemy, we're at war with Germany, we're going to intern you. In war, there are no victors, really, there are only casualties, and so on, but again, that's an area to debate and consider from that point of view. Once Laurent had actually left, he was never actually used again from that point of view. And the picture post did, however, adopt what was seen as a social realistic approach. What you then go on to see through the 1940s, 1950s, and pretty much for the duration of the picture post's life as a magazine, was a heroic view of the working class. Techniques that were pioneered by German photojournalism were often used. They were developed within the whole system. And the fourth point there is really critical, that it's the design that is seen as the most important aspect, not the journalism. Remember that photographers as thoroughbreds. Having said that, codes of journalism, such as balance, impartiality, objectivity, and so on, were pretty much in evidence throughout the picture post. So they never actually create something which was a total fabrication. They would propaganda or use propaganda in their images. What they would absolutely effectively put in and produce would primarily relate to their own particular sort of brand and take on the subject and the story they were taking. That's an interesting line. Picture post had a little design about it. Well, not when compared to AIZ and some of the other American, German-based magazines and so on. Critics at the time did say that the picture post was far too traditional in terms of it was like a magazine version of a standard English newspaper with traditional type, etc. And, again, topic of discussion, the smug impartiality of British journalism. It was always seen as being in search of objectivity, with the photo montages that we were seeing were often too subjective. Certainly in terms of wartime, you have that sort of notion there of the story and the image that demonstrates the, you know, success of D-Day, invasion, brewing, etc. Yes, okay, our first excursion into Europe has failed miserably, the Germans have driven us back, we've had to evacuate people from Dunkirk, but it's still our finest hour. We still talk about the Dunkirk spirits today. Because at the end of the day, have a cup of tea, it'll all be all right. It might be. Not. Following through this, other key events in World War II, of course, the Battle for Britain, and so on and so forth. but also a sort of sense of what happens after the war. What happens, you know, if, you know, we can actually come to an end in some way, shape or form. And the picture post actually was being used very much to talk about new policies, new aspects that were coming through that were really designed to ensure that there was going to be a better time in peace. I mean, one of the most shocking results in elections was the fact that Churchill was booted out of office in the first election back after the Second World War. How could a man who'd been at the heart of so much success against the Nazis and so on, and represented Britain on the world stage, how could he and his party be booted out of office? And one of the elements that may have actually come into that was quite simply this notion of actually, yes, if you're pushing a sort of socialist line of having a health service, a national health service, having a minimum wage, having child allowance policies and so on and so forth, and it's been developed through the picture post, etc., through its writers, through its images and so on, it can lead to post-war reform. So it's a really important part of saying, okay, was it just an entertainment magazine? Was it just a magazine which was disposable? Well, maybe, but also were there other areas where they take a particular editorial line to kind of demonstrate some of the key notions of the British nature and so on? And these are sort of aspects where, certainly in the 1940 edition, A Plan for Britain, which is worth accessing through the archives, etc., you see these key areas that are being mentioned and seen as ways forward. A bit like Harrison and company for the Mass Observation Project were keen on finding out how do the working class live, how do we actually improve their lot, and so on. That's the sort of line for A Plan of Education. And if you look at that photograph in particular, maybe you've got something which could be deemed to be at the heart of what many folk would see as being totally wrong with the British situation. You've got the Toffs, Harrow educated ones, and you've got the Louts, the people who are coming completely separate from the hostile system. And there the twain shall meet. And how do you actually sort of run a country where you're sort of so divided educationally that you don't have a kind of common ground or experience? Well, maybe we muddle through. Maybe we sort of work through that process. But again, that whole notion of, you know, says there are two systems of education, a picture that sums up our main problem. Two boys stand top-hatted at outside Lord's cricket ground. Three boys stand bareheaded and stare at them. Between the two groups is a barrier deliberately created by our system of education. Our task is to remove the barrier to bring the public schools into the general scheme. And we're probably still talking about it today. You know, comprehensive schools, grammar schools, secondary schools, private schools, etc. I'm not sure whether there will be a solution. But there's still a reason that in terms of what is going to be best for the country, what's going to actually work, how do you actually develop those particular elements and so on. So, wartime, lots of key elements being put forward by a picture post, reflective of some of the key aspects that were happening, the successes, the failures, the glorious triumphs and so on. What happened in the after-war period that did? It's a disaster. Where stands Britain? Britain at the end of the Second World War was in a dreadful state. Effectively, the country was nigh on bankrupt. It was substantially in debt to the United States, with debts that effectively wouldn't be paid off until the early part of this century. There was a massive sort of concern about what we were going to do. There was a huge infrastructure challenge in terms of how Britain was going to actually continue to work and exist. Sometimes, actually funded, ironically, in the 1950s by a massive campaign to have more migrants come to Britain. And so this image of Stonehenge in the snow was seen as very much a symbolic notion of saying, well, Stonehenge is still standing after thousands and thousands of years, despite the weather conditions and so on. And actually, that's the other element, of course. The 1946 winter was one of the worst winters on record. How do we actually sort of work through to ourselves, actually, in terms of that whole system? So what happens, special issue on the crisis, and so on? He actually had the photographer, Bill Brandt, that one for quite some time, but it finally emerged. That was the time where you could actually sort of use it under the cover, etc., or as a cover. And, you know, that line there, post-war euphoria. Yes, for a moment, a brief time in 1945, VE Day, and then VJ Day, victory in Europe, victory in Japan, you know, success, happiness, top of our field, etc. But then, as I say, unfortunately, the lines that there were a lot of areas. In fact, rationing didn't end in Britain until the mid-1950s. So people still actually had rationing to actually sort of work through for at least another 7 or 8 years after the end of the Second World War. So lots of really big issues there. And, yes, you're probably young enough to actually remember when David Cameron actually used the term, we're all in this together, it's the age of austerity, etc. You know, there is that sort of notion of how do we actually cope with this? How do we represent this? How do we reflect it? Other things that come through in the post-war period for the Picture Post are issues relating to editorial freedom. The kind of uniformity that had been expressed during the Second World War tended to sort of become more strained. The North Korea War was actually in earnest developing, this battle and the ideological battle between the USA and the USSR, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, over obviously Korea, China, elements coming through within the whole thing, the 39th parallel and so on, all key areas. And a particular story on the mistreatment of North Korean prisoners by South Korean troops was actually sort of pulled by the publisher and banned from actually being put into place. Mistreatment of prisoners, images that basically sort of show that we were supposed to be the good guys and yet we were really mistreating prisoners badly. Not good publicity. How do we actually cope with that? Do you run the story? Do you say not? What sort of images is it? What does that actually say in terms of how politically people are actually sort of going to respond to that? What we're really talking about here is censorship. You know, have people the freedom to do this? Is it going to impact the whole system? And so on and so forth. I talked a few moments ago about Bert Hardy, and I think it's worthwhile looking at some of the sort of key areas that he's responsible for in the sort of closing moments of the sort of session I'm spending with you now. Use the term the humanist photographer. It's true. He basically wanted to capture the sort of notion of being human, that sort of notion of, you know, what are we like when we sort of, you know, caught off guard, candid shots, not in a sort of paparazzi way. But this whole notion of not simply having a stereotype which actually says, cloth cap, you know, northerner, etc., or, you know, frankly, top hatted person, you know, avoiding those sort of things, but actually looking at reflecting what was becoming what it had always been, but actually was a multi-ethnic country that was actually sort of developing, growing, finding its way in the middle part of the 20th century. Without necessarily looking at negative stereotypes or romantic stereotypes or rural-based stereotypes, etc., industrial ones and so on, but actually providing the whole notion of images that we see within that whole system. There's one classic example that you see within the whole system there. Say, photographers by Bert Hardy. Again, Picture Post, humanist photography and images of 1950s Cardiff. Yeah, it's just literally capturing it life as it is. You know, we often see the sort of photography sort of images there. There's not an ideological aspect behind this, although, again, you might say, there's got to be an ideological system there. But it's worth sort of considering what sort of messages are coming through when you're seeing ordinary folk going about their business. And this is at a time where actually there are parts of Britain that think, you couldn't possibly have a non-white person here. Just not on it. So, well, actually, there had always been a sort of a multicultural, multi-ethnic area, certainly around the sort of Cardiff, Liverpool zones and so on and so forth. And it's a way, again, of beginning to get that sort of appreciation for life. I use the term master, it's celebration of the ordinary. But again, there are other areas that are coming through in terms of that as well. And all of these works by Bert Hardy, they're posed up to a point, but they're not sort of artificially posed and structured. You know, again, it's more kind of image of reality. It's one of the reasons I often say, great thing about photographic books and magazines and so on, and books as well to a certain extent, they're time machines. You know, they're portals that you can actually just glimpse a sort of segment of of times over the decades, etc. It's one of the real valuable resources of the 20th century, and probably why the Getty Foundation paid so much for the archive, to actually get the sort of flavour of what things are about here. And hopefully we prevent the same mistakes or errors or challenges occurring in future by knowing where we've come from, because if we don't know where we've come from, we don't really know where we're going. But the picture post did come to an end. And why? Why was this thing actually sort of worked through? Well, I said at the start of this piece that there was a relationship the picture post was looking to build with its readership. And it did. It had a good readership for, you know, 18, 19 years and so on. They'd gone through a Second World War together. They'd gone through North Korea. They actually seen a big change in the sort of the onset of the National Health Service, images, social conditions and so on. But we've also talked about some of the actual challenges that were actually there. Sometimes editors have different views, owners have different views, readers have different views. You know, in the 1950s, you're also seeing the growth of consumerism, fueled very much by the United States, and it's buy, buy, buy. The way to success, the way to happiness is to buy stuff. And if you are still unhappy, buy more stuff. You know, that's the sort of line that, again, is being propagated. And you can see that because you go to the cinema and you see wonderful Technicolor Hollywood images that are actually there, musicals that are around from that. You don't want to necessarily sort of be reflected and reminded of, oh, we're still poor in Britain, we're all negative and so on. You know, Britain really didn't. I mean, the only movie element that came out of Britain which had any colour in the 50s were the Hammer horror movies. Which again, great, but again, they sort of worked out. It wasn't until the 60s you started getting the cultural shift. Meanwhile, in America, you're getting rock and roll, Elvis Presley, Bill Haley and the Comets, Marlon Brando, The Wildling, you know, James Dean, a whole range of things coming through on that basis. And so you're also seeing the growth of the teenager, the creation of the teenager, as somebody who's a completely different demographic and group of people that you can sell even more things to. So was the picture post seen as being trendy and hip? No, not really. You know, it didn't quite have that connectivity on that sort of basis. So obviously, you're looking at that whole sort of element that's there. And as James Cameron said there, picture post painlessly surrendered all the values and purposes that had made it a journal of consideration. Before the eyes of its diminishing public, it drifted into the market of arch cheesecake and commonplace decoration. And by, it died, as by then it deserved to do. So it lost its place. It kind of did. It wasn't brave enough to stick with its kind of ideals and ideologies of sort of really maintaining the sort of thing that made it a success in the first place, and tried more or less to follow trends rather than simply to set them. And I think that's where it kind of fell between two stools, and eventually circulation effectively came to an end. And we compared it to Life magazine in the United States. Well, Life circulated at 5 million per issue. Condé Nast, I mean, you're talking really the sort of the equivalent, the precursors of things like Harper's Bazaar, Vogue magazine, Tatler, you know, all these sort of areas that are sort of like the high-end glossies, which Picture Post could possibly have gone into, but never really kind of was quite there. And it was seen as probably a bit too quaint, perhaps, in terms of its old system. As White says in the 1940 edition, from that point of view, writing about Life magazine, magazines, the dominant political medium of the United States of America. Don't think you can say that these days, although certainly the whole notion of magazines and the tremendous popularity that they saw and developed throughout sort of majority of the 20th century is worth noting. I've put in a few sort of key areas that come through there which might be worth looking at. As we sort of migrate back to the library, and hopefully there's a Zibi Garnett collection there, what I'll be asking you to do is to, again, look at some of the resources and elements that have sort of come together from that particular perspective. The first group actually are with me in UL 103, as opposed to where we were last week, so that's on your timetable. And the second group is with me in UL 101, and then we'll hopefully get some keys and have some fun for the last couple of hour sessions that we've got now. Has anybody got any sort of final questions on the picture post? People always ask me in the seminars or ask me any other time. I did actually post the lecture for last week online,
as an audio piece, so you can do that. I'll probably do the same with this one. Thanks for your time, and I'll see you over the way in the library. Mm-hmm.